Welcome to the Cephalopodcast, where we are discussing the HBO show Watchmen. Just to get this out of the way, a cephalopod is a squid, and a podcast is what you're listening to, so we got a little wordplay there. I'm pretty proud of myself. I just want to get that out at the beginning. This is going to be an episode zero, so this is sort of like setting the groundwork for what we're going to talk about. I will be your host. My name is Scott, and I am here with my friend Jason.
Hey.
I'm a huge Watchmen nerd, and Jason, not so much. You did say you read the comic like way back in the day.
Yeah, it's got to have been at least 15 years ago. So, like, yeah, I barely remember it. I don't remember, like, getting way into it, but...
I mean, do you remember liking it, or you were just like, meh?
It was kind of meh, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not for everyone. I get it. But so what I want to cover. So the plan here is to watch, do an episode by episode rewatch of the Watchmen TV show on HBO. And I've seen it. In fact, I think I've watched it three times. It's one of my all time favorite television shows, not to set the bar too high. And Jason has not watched it. So perhaps as we go through it, you know, I'll be able to illuminate some things that maybe he didn't catch, or I think it'll just be an interesting way to watch the show. So before we start, I think you will get more out of the show if you understand a little bit of the background. So you don't have to have read the original comic to watch the show. The show is fantastic on its own. But if you have a little understanding of the backstory, I think you will get some more out of it. So I want to cover some of the themes here. And then when they come up in the show, we can reference back to this or back to the comic, and it will make more sense. So this Watchmen show is clearly based on the original comic, which was written by Alan Moore, and it came out on DC Comics in 1986. So this is a super old comic. It was written in the heart of the Cold War. So there was a very serious fear of nuclear war, nuclear winter. So that is a major theme of the comic. It's kind of dark. In fact, this was one of the first, I want to say, anti-hero or really dark comics. Because up until that time, comics were really designed for kids. They were entertaining. They did not have real serious themes. Not really. I mean, you had Superman fighting, you know, Hitler, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff, but it was pretty campy. This is very serious. It has a very serious undertone. So this was, I want to say, this was also, I believe it was published on the Vertigo line of DC Comics, which was sort of like their alternative comics and their dark line. They're more serious, more mature line. I want to say adult, but I mean, it was definitely approachable to like teenagers. So it was a standout style for what it was in its time. I mean, nowadays you have a lot of anti-heroes. You've got your Saul Goodmans and your Sopranos, but back when this was coming out, that was a much less defined genre.
It was like 80s, right? Did you say
1986? Yeah,
86. Yeah, that's crazy. Like, is this before or after Spawn?
This would have been well before Spawn, because I think Spawn was the 90s.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of like the darkest or grittiest, like, comic book that I could think of that was even that old or possibly that old.
Right. I mean, even Batman at the time was still pretty campy. I mean, Batman, when it started in, what, the 20s, was really campy. I mean, he was more of a detective than he was a superhero, and it was just, you know, him using science to solve murders. It was kind of like the CSI of its day. It didn't become sort of dark and gritty till much later.
Yeah, Spawn was 92, looks like. Yeah, this book, I mean, I do appreciate it, because it wasn't just dark and gritty kind of like Spawn it was going for. It did have multiple layers going on. It seemed like it really had something to say about heroes, and, you know, could have been shown in any other medium, but in comic books it has like a stark contrast to what other comics were out at the time, and comics being so you know, focused on superheroes, whereas this has superheroes in it, but they represent so much, something so much different. And it kind of, I guess it probably kind of threw me off when I read it. I was like, wait, these aren't really superheroes. This is like a soap opera for much of it. And
yeah, this is largely Watchmen, the comics. And I think the show also is largely a commentary on the state of humanity and also the state of superheroes. So that was one of the other notes that I wrote was there are superheroes in it, but only one really has powers. Dr. Manhattan, the blue guy, is the only one that has actual powers. And he basically gets powers from, you know, getting trapped in this science experiment and getting gamma radiation kind of thing. So there are other costumed heroes, I guess, but none of them have powers. So it's worth noting that all of the superheroes in the comic are essentially real people with real problems. And I think that was one of the things that I really liked about it, because you had things like the Justice League or the Avengers, where you had all these superheroes, all these huge egos and huge powers coming together, and they all got along. Like, we got to go fight the bad guy. Who's in charge? Oh, it's Superman. Everybody defers to Superman, or everybody defers to Iron Man, whatever, right? That's just not the way the real world works. You've got people, you know, with that much power and that much ego, they're not going to get along, right? I think it's sort of like an early version of The Boys, the Amazon show, where you have all these superheroes and they are essentially just infighting to see who can claw their way to the top.
Yeah, The Boys is a great show, I really liked it, and so it kind of like represents that for me in what maybe superheroes would look like in the real world with like a corporation controlling them, and how horrific, like a dude can run super fast and like what could happen with that, and how actually horrific that could be, you know. It's kind of,
I mean exactly what could happen in, you know, DC or Marvel, but it just never does. Everything always has a happy ending for the most part.
So there's like, yeah, there's sugar coating on everything. Yeah.
So that's what I wrote about The Watchmen, is that it's about real humans that are fighting crime, but they are flawed and they fight with each other. At one point, one of them sexually assaults one of the other. So it has very serious themes. The show was written by Damon Lindelof, and most of it was directed by him as well. So Damon Lindelof, if you don't know, he was the creator of Lost. He did The Leftovers. He did Prometheus, and he did one of the new Star Trek movies, Star Trek Into Darkness. So he's got a pretty good resume for nerdy style stuff. The music for the show was done by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross from Nine Inch Nails. So it's got some.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's got right. The original comics is a murder mystery. So the show follows that theme as well. There is a mystery laced through the whole thing. So you will see a mystery unfold and ultimately be solved. I mentioned briefly earlier that there are superheroes and only one of them has powers, Dr. Manhattan. It's worth noting that at the very end of the comic, he leaves Earth and he goes off in search of a less complicated galaxy. So I guess we should start with the graphic novel takes place in 1986, and the television show takes place in modern times. So I'd have to look up exactly when this aired, but there's 30 or 40 years between them. They take place
2019.
They take place in the same universe, just separated by time. So you will see that Dr. Manhattan is no longer on. He essentially gets fed up with humanity. He's like, you guys are crazy, and gets the heck out of here. You will see that Dr. Manhattan, he walks around nude. He's essentially omnipotent. You know, he can go anywhere and be anywhere, and he is aware of everything all at once. So you'll see. It's interesting what they do with his character. The only thing I was going to note was he walks around nude because he doesn't care. He's beyond human comprehension of nudity or any sort of humility, or he doesn't care. At one point, at least in the comic, he does essentially put on like superhero underwear just because he's tired of people, like, you know, gawking at him, but he really doesn't care. So you there's some blue penis in the comic, and there may be blue penis in the show. We will see. The bad guy in the comic was named Adrian Veidt. His I don't know, superhero name was Ozymandias, and he was considered the world's smartest man. I mean, he was kind of like the Elon Musk of his time. Like, he invented all these companies. He was the titan of industry. And he had some ideas about humanity. I don't know how much I want to go into it, but it's worth noting. So again, I just want to set the background for what's going to happen in the show. So all this happened in the comic in the 80s. So at the end of the comic, Adrian Veidt drops a gigantic squid, not a gigantic squid, multiple gigantic squids on New York. So the some of the closing scenes in the comic are these buildings covered in these just huge squid-looking alien things. And his intent was to get the entire world to come together and unite against a common enemy. Because you have to remember, this was during the Cold War, and there was concern that the Russians would nuke the U.S. or both. So his plan essentially was, I'm going to give the entire world a common enemy so they stop fighting with each other and they'll worry about me instead. So there are some parallels to it came up a lot in the Watchmen subreddit during COVID, because essentially the whole world had the same, you know, unified enemy in COVID, and clearly it didn't work out as well. So
so Ozymandias was his objective, because so it was clear that he did the squid thing. And that was his purpose, or
yes,
and so he wanted people to like unite against him,
not against him. No, that he beams these squids in, and so he basically convinces humanity that we're being invaded by aliens, and they all bond together to fight the squids and to fight the aliens, so that they don't have time to nuke each other.
Gotcha.
So there will definitely be a theme of squids in this show, hence the title of the podcast, Cephalopodcast.
In the first episode, it like rains squids or something.
It does rain squids. So yeah, we'll talk about that. That's one of the themes of the show, will be squids. One of the main characters in the original comic was a guy named Rorschach. And he was I put good guy in quote fingers. He wore a Rorschach mask, and it moved at all times. I'm trying to think how best to describe this. He dies at the end of the comic, actually. He gets, Dr. Manhattan kills him. I don't want to go into too much about it, but so Rorschach dies. Rorschach is no more. In fact, I believe he's the only character from the comic that actually dies. So the potential is that all of the rest of the characters could be in this show, and several of them are. But again, it's 40 years later, 35 years later, so they're not going to be quite the same. They're not going to be in their prime.
Isn't the comedian dead?
Well, that's true, because it does start out with the murder mysteries of somebody kills the comedian. Good point. Rorschach, I put quotation fingers, was a good guy. He was on essentially the good team, but he was a seriously messed up dude. He was probably the definition of anti-hero. And there are definite themes of him being a white nationalist and having race issues in the comic. So that will come up in the show as well. There's going to be a big theme of race in the show. At the end of the very last page of the comic, Rorschach has written a manifesto, essentially just ranting and raving against the state of humanity and how crazy people are. And again, he's dead, but he's left his manifesto. He's dropped it in the mailbox of, I can't remember if it was a magazine or a newspaper, like a right-wing, you know, white nationalist Nazi newspaper. He drops it in their inbox, and that's all you ever see of it. And then clearly that actually comes full circle in the show. There's a major theme of clocks, watches, and time in the original comic. I mean, part of that is hence the name Watchmen. It's worth noting, I don't know if it really comes up in the show, but Dr. Manhattan's father was a watchmaker. He was a watch repairer. So Dr. Manhattan actually has some history with clocks and time. And again, there's this big theme of potential nuclear winter. I don't know if you remember in the 90s, they had those doomsday clocks where the was it the minute hand or the second hand was like 5 minutes away from midnight, which was considered the end of humanity kind of thing. So there's a big theme of that. Because Dr. Manhattan was essentially superhuman, and he was a scientist also, because of some of his powers, he's actually able to lead the he helps humanity develop abundant energy, abundant electricity. So there's a big theme of electric cars and electric powered things in the show, in the comic and the show. So you will see a couple things. Again, it takes place in modern times, but it's slightly futuristic just because it's an alternate timeline, because Dr. Manhattan has changed a couple things. In the comic takes place in the 80s, but they flash back to some previous editions of this superhero troupe. And Nixon is president in... I don't even know when Nixon was president. That's how good I am at history. But the point is that Nixon uses Dr. Manhattan, because he's an American, and he uses Dr. Manhattan to win the Vietnam War. So he basically sends Dr. Manhattan over to Vietnam, and Dr. Manhattan's invincible and all-powerful, and he just, you know, kills everyone over there, essentially, which causes the United States to win the Vietnam War. Nixon becomes super popular. There's no Watergate. That's not really a thing, because he's super popular, and he is essentially the president for life, essentially, is kind of what they lead it to. It's not said in the comic, but they say it a little bit in the show. What ultimately happens is Nixon is just a super popular president until the squids fall on New York, and then this all happens off screen. Essentially, he doesn't know how to deal with it, or it's just too much. And he gets voted out of office. So he's a 5-term president. So there's going to be a serious theme of Nixon. Nixon is kind of a superhero, like there's statues of Nixon and things around, because people really like Nixon. There is a theme. And again, this came up again during COVID. A lot of this was really appropriate during COVID. One of the themes in the comic is an act of Congress called the Keene Act. It was passed in 1977, and it was a national law that outlawed costumed adventuring. So what was going on in the comics was that there was a lot of vigilante groups, and they would go out dressed up like superheroes, and they would just beat the crap out of people, and they would take the law into their own hands. So much so that in this universe, it becomes a problem and they have to outlaw it. You're not allowed to go out and fight crime or do anything dressed up. The only way you can fight crime is if you register with the United States government and you essentially go on the government's payroll, and then you can go out and do some of these things. So a couple of the people in the comics, you know, basically sign up and they fight crime, you know, legitimately. And some of them don't. There will be... definite mention of the Keene Act, about who's allowed to fight crime and what makes a vigilante and what is not a vigilante. Again, it was very appropriate during the times of COVID, because there's a lot of masks in this show. And what does it mean if you wear a mask, and can you get away with more things if people can't see your face?
Yeah, that's why I looked up when this came out, because it was like very mask centric. Because I've seen, to be clear, I've seen just the first episode a few weeks ago, just to see if I liked it. And yeah, masks are a big theme in the show. And this is during COVID, after COVID's happened. And so it feels weirdly prescient.
Yeah. Prescient. There you go.
Yeah. So it was interesting.
The Watchmen comic, or I guess it's a graphic novel now. The only way you can read it is that you need to go to Amazon and buy it collected in a book. It was considered number 18 on Time Magazine's all-time 100 greatest novels. So it's not a novel. I mean, it's a comic book. I mean, there's a lot of prose in it, don't get me wrong, but it's actually on Time Magazine's all-time best list. And it's the only comic on the list, so that says something about it. So it's on a list with, you know, Moby Dick and Anna Karenina and 1984, that kind of thing, like Watchmen, rated number 18. Robert Redford becomes president after Nixon is outed. In the show, he is president. There's a nod on the final pages of the comic. Robert Redford is positioning himself to run against Nixon, sort of like how Reagan became president. He was a Hollywood actor before he ran for president. So they set up Robert Redford basically to become president. So when the show opens, you will see that Robert Redford is president.
Well, it's almost kind of like Kennedy, who is like this really charismatic and good-looking dude who ran against Nixon and won because of like televisions were invented. And so like you had that, he had that like edge, and he kind of looks like Robert Redford a little bit too. So I wonder if there's any influence there, but.
There was some mention before the show started. I think Damon Lindelof like leaked something about, you know, Robert Redford being president in the show, and people were really excited. Like, is Robert Redford actually going to be in the show? That would be rather tongue in cheek if they could get him to come and actually play the president. Spoiler alert, Robert Redford is not in the show, but he is president. So. The last and final note that I have, is that this was President Obama's, or one of his favorite TV shows of, I think it, whatever, 2019, or he put out a list, I think, on Facebook of like, here's a list of my top five shows or whatever of the time, and Watchmen made the list. So it's one of my probably top three favorite shows of all time. It's pretty amazing how good it is and how well it fits in with this comic that came out 35 years ago. So those are just the real quick summary things I think are maybe worth noting, you know, how the book ends, how a couple of the characters, you know, got started and how they end up. Those things, all those will be paralleled in the television show. So knowing that going in will probably make it a little bit more enjoyable. Do you have any questions? Are you ready to get started? So we're going to do, you know, one episode a week or whatever our schedules work out, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah.
Did you know anything about the show before you went into it?
No.
Mm-mm. What made you watch even the first episode?
Well, you recommended it. That's.
I thought you had watched it at least one, like back when it was out, and you didn't like it, or.
No.
No, this is the first time you watched it. Okay.
Yeah, I never got into it. I think because of the movie, I watched the movie and I didn't really get the movie that much. And I feel, you know, I just kind of feel like The Boys scratched that same itch for me, and so I was like, oh, you know, I appreciate the history of Watchmen, and I appreciate kind of that it was revolutionary in that sense of being a satire of heroes in a gritty way. But I felt like, you know, Boys was like, you know, did it better maybe, or at least better than the movie. But I feel like there's something else going on. You know, there's definitely increased amount of layers. And the first episode of the show was very intriguing. I mean, the politics was also really intriguing. It's very heavy handed or, with the type of politics that's going on, they're kind of flipped around than what you'd normally see in a political commentary, but it's definitely political, which I appreciated.
Well, it's worth noting, we just got off doing an Andor podcast or watching the Andor television show, which is very politic heavy. And I think that was part of the reason I think we started this, because we talked a little bit about how it was interesting to see like a political intrigue thriller on television done so well. And I think it reminded me of this. And that's a lot of what this is. This is almost more politics than the original comic, because the comic was a murder mystery with some superheroes thrown in. This is a commentary on modern society and race relations and human relations. So,
yeah, definitely race relations. I'm getting a lot of that from the first episode. So, yeah, I'm really interested.
You brought up one other thing I want to mention real quick. I forgot about. So, Zack Snyder did the Watchmen movie. It was Watchmen for a long time was considered largely unfilmable because it's just so big and sprawling and there's so much to it. It's not like Lord of the Rings. Like, it's just really hard to do it well. And I think the movie's fantastic. It's about as good as you can possibly do that just because it's so hard. I mean, does it contain everything? No. Does it hit every note? No. But there's just no way unless you wanted to have a, you know, 14-hour movie. But there is a very clear difference in the ending of the movie and the ending of the comic book. There are no squids in the movie. So if you are, you know, trying to cheat and not read the comic and you get to the end of the movie thinking you understand how things go, it's totally different. In the end of the movie, Dr. Manhattan, Ozymandias essentially outs Dr. Manhattan, and Dr. Manhattan becomes the bad guy in the world, unites against him. And so there are no squids, which, I mean, functionally it has the same purpose as you get humanity to unite against one person. So at the time, the ending didn't really bug me because it has the same purpose and it kind of works better in the purpose of a movie. But now that this show is out, it's worth noting that there are no squids in that version. And when you watch this television show, there will definitely be squids and you will be very confused if you are not aware of what's going on with the squids.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the movie, like if I was to get more accurate with my criticism, I think it was just way too slick and like way too cool. Like Zack Snyder has like a really specific style of film and everything is badass. Everything is cool. Slick shots of people running or just crashing through windows, slow-mo everywhere. I don't think the storyline really lends itself well to that kind of filmmaking. I think it needs a darker tone. It needs a sadder or like, because there's some really sad moments. There's some really like kind of dark moments, and it's kind of glorified a bit. You didn't find that odd in the movie?
No, you are absolutely right. Everything you just said is true, and everything you just said about the movie is why I love the movie.
Oh, so wow.
Maybe when we get to the end, you know, maybe as a wrap up, we can watch the movie and see if it makes any more sense now that we watched the show. I don't know. Yeah, I love the slow-mo and the backstory of there's so much. It's just beautiful, like chef's kiss, like some of the slow-mo scenes and the things that you see in the background and how he captures some of the characters and scenes from the comic, you know, in weird ways, just super subtle things in the background. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, and you're totally right. But if you have the background of having read the comic and you see what he's doing there and you see how he's telling the story, it's done really well. But that said, there were a lot of people that were not fans of it. I would say that on the Watchmen subreddit, it's 50-50, maybe 60-40 people that like the show. It's the movie, which I think is unfortunate. I think it's pretty well established that everyone, at least on the Watchmen subreddit, really did like the show. The show is really well done. So it has a good pedigree. And I think it has a pretty good rating on Metacritic, too. It might have gotten a little bit of review bombed because there is a definite race characteristic to it. And I think that turned some people off. Yeah. So it has an 85 critical score on Metacritic and a 56 user score. And all the low reviews are just talking about everything being woke and why does everything have to be about race? So
it might have got like review bombed.
Yeah,
you can never tell.
I know I keep saying that was the last thing, but I just thought of another thing. The comic was written by a really famous comic book writer at the time. His name is Alan Moore. He's done amazing comics. He did Swamp Thing. He did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He did What's it called? Remember the 5th of November. He's got
Vendetta.
V for Vendetta. He's got a great pedigree for comics, but he's also super old man and grumpy and curmudgeonly, and he hates this movie. He hates the movie. He hates the show. He hates everything that's not his that he wrote in 86. I kind of feel like he wanted, like, I wrote it and it's done. Nobody's allowed to touch it. Like, I told the story, right? Well, DC owns it. And it's super popular. And so DC has done some comics after the fact. They've done that movie, and now they've done this show. And Alan Moore hates it all. But I don't care, because he's just a grumpy old guy, and I love it. So,
is he the comic book dude that you went to see at Comic-Con one time?
Oh, no.
Okay, sorry.
I don't get the impression that Alan Moore leaves his house a whole lot. Certainly not to talk to comic book fans, because, again, he's super grumpy. But the guy that I saw was Frank Miller, the guy that did Dark Knight Returns, and he did some of the old Wolverine stuff. And the dude, they're very similar. They're both, like, cranky, old, creepy guys. So I know the story you're talking about where Frank Miller was just, like, off his meds that day. Yeah, you could easily tell that same story about Alan Moore, but I don't get the impression Alan Moore goes out. He doesn't do a lot of press. He's just kind of doing his own thing. In fact, I think he's pretty much definitely retired from writing comics. And just the other day, somebody quoted him, or they did an interview with him, and he just crapped all over Marvel movies about how terrible superhero movies are. I think that's just kind of the kind of guy he is, where he just doesn't like anything new and shiny, and so.
All right. Man after my own heart.
That's true. You would get along with him. He's very, yeah, he just kind of hates everything.
No, so. He seems next level grumpy. Yeah,
He really takes it to 11.
Santa Claus, or he looks like Gandalf.
He does. He looks like a grumpy Gandalf.
Yeah.
Or maybe a Dumbledore. Yeah, it's just because of the beard, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's all I had. Just some quick notes to go with the show. We will watch the first episode there. Oh, it's worth noting there are 9 episodes. So we'll do 9 episodes of the podcast, and then, you know, probably a wrap up episode after that. The original comic, it ran for exactly 12 issues. That was the plan. It had a full arc. Like, we're going to do a 12 issue story. We're going to tell the whole thing start to finish. It didn't get canceled. It didn't get extended. It told its story in its amount of time. So.
And so this show, I mean, there's no, like, talk of a new season or anything?
There is not. I don't want to go – the show wraps up. The intention, Damon Lindelof, when he went into this, did the same thing that Alan Moore did. He wrote a complete story that has a beginning and it has a very definite end. And when it ended, and it was pretty critically acclaimed, everybody was like, all right, dude, how much, you know, I'm going to send a dump truck of money over to your house. How much do you want to write season 2? And he was like, nope, I told the story that I wanted. I'm not interested in doing a season 2. Now, that said, the story is left open, and it's possible that it could come back. It hasn't. It's 2023 now, and it has not come back. There's been no talk of a season 2. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. Damon Lindelof is not interested in doing a season 2. I have a feeling that just like how they made the movie and they made, you know, new comics, what's going to happen is it's a valuable property, and somebody will approach HBO or somebody will approach DC or Damon Lindelof with a great idea in 5 years, 10 years, and then they'll come back and they'll do something else with it. But there's no direct sequel planned. It's a one and done, and that's what we're going to cover.
Gotcha.
All right, cool. See, that was only, what, 35 minutes? This will probably be the shortest episode we ever do.
All right,
we'll be back with a real episode 1 that will cover the first episode of the Watchmen television show, and that's all I got.